It is the custom here, I understand, for the speaker to introduce herself or himself each time that the session begins. So I'll do that. My name is Rieke, R-I-E-K-E. I'm called Vern. I, by vocation, am a teacher at the University of Washington School of Law. Was admitted to practice a long time ago, practice of law, and for a while I practiced law, but I've been teaching for a long time now, and so I am an academic lawyer rather than a practicing one. More important in terms of identifying myself for this morning, I am the grandfather of Emily Jane Cunningham. Now, some of you may not know Emily Jane because she was only a week old at 1 minute after nine last night. But she has all of the fire and determination of her father and all of the skill and beauty and grace of her mother, and so you will get to know her someday, and your life will be enriched as mine has been. My daughter Janice shared a room in the hospital where Emily Jane was born with another woman, and I couldn't help, even in my joy of getting to know my grandchild, of noticing the other mother, the mother of Peter, because no father came to visit Peter. Peter's mother was a 16-year-old girl, father of her child, is not her husband. She is unmarried. And things began to happen almost immediately. I noticed, for example, in the Seattle newspaper the next day that the world was informed of this very important event, that Emily Jane had been born. Peter was not mentioned. When John, my son-in-law, who had been with my wife, with my daughter, as now is common, all through her labor and delivery, rejoicing with her and taking the child home, where preparations had been made, as you would prepare for your child, no one came to get Peter. Peter's mother decided to take Peter someplace. But what is Peter? I think it's scriptural that God has set us in families. And what does that mean to you, to be set in a family? The word that I elected to put on the board as the announcement of this session: does a bastard have a family? Is a nasty word. It rings so harshly in one's ears, condemning, a put down, as we would say. Peter was a sweet, lovely boy. He is a sweet, lovely boy. In some ways, that word bastard is a kind word, because early on in the history of our civilization, in the Roman civil law, for example, the child was nullius filius, nobody's baby, no one's child. In the height of her glory in Rome, Historians tell us that between 50 to 100 children every night were placed in the public square and left for anyone who wanted to come along and pick one up for a slave or some other purpose, or just to die, because they were not children who came into the world set into families. There was no lineage. They were nobody's child, not even the mother's, because in the early Roman law, the mother had her existence and her identity in the father, the head of the household, the paterfamilias. So in one way, our law grew a little bit in saying that Peter at least has a mother. But does Peter have a family? I don't know what you would say a family is. What I'm now going to say, I do not mean to be flippant, and I do not mean to be in any sense sacrilegious. Matthew tells us that after Joseph and Mary had been, the English word, betrothed, somewhere between our engagement and marriage, not quite engaged, not quite married to Mary in the Jewish law, before there had been any intercourse, that Joseph found that Mary was with child. And being a just man, you know, the penalty for adultery was death. Being a just man and realizing that his wife had a child which we are told was not his, he decided privately just to divorce her and put her away rather than asking that she be killed. And Luke picks up the story then, and he says that in the days of Caesar Augustus, a decree went out that all the world should be taxed. Some versions say enrolled, meaning enrolled for taxation. And that every family, every person, went to his place of ancient origin. And the case of Joseph and his wife, that place was Bethlehem, as you know. And when they arrived there, before anything else happened, Mary gave birth to a child. Now comes the part that I don't want you to think I'm joking about, you know. A lawyer at that point might say, well, the point of the story was that they had to go there to be taxed. They had to submit their Form 1040s. And what I want to know as a lawyer is, did Joseph claim a child exemption on his tax return? Joseph knew he was not the father of the child. He was the husband of the mother. Well, of course, they didn't have our income tax law, and they didn't have a Form 1040 with a child exemption. But there were exemptions. My good friend Umhau, for example, tells me that the father of a child could not be drafted for military service for 1 year after the birth of the child. Did Joseph file for exemption? Or was Jesus not in the family of Joseph? A very practical kind of question. What other kinds of questions do we answer with this concept of family? What difference does it make whether a person is a member of a family? Somebody give me a couple. What difference does it make?
Family gives the child
What do you mean by support?
Support, I mean the love, the care.
Love, care, yeah. affection, parenting, acceptance, psychological identity. Economic support, bread, housing.
It's security.
Security, protection. The human animal is feeble and unable to protect itself for longer, I think, than probably any other animal that we know needs to be cared. Psychological parenting, love and affection, economic support, security. What else in a family?
Identity.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Identity.
Identity.
Yes.
I am a Reiki, I told you that. You are a Lorsgaard or whatever it may be.
Inheritance.
Inheritance. Boy, how conscious the Jewish people were of that. We have never been bastards. God is our Father. We have never been outcasts to be in the wilderness. A big thing in the Jewish law. Did Joseph claim to be the father of Christ? Luke 2 starts out with the trip and the birth of Christ and ends with Christ at the age of 12 at the temple where he stayed with his friends and talked to the high priests. And what did Mary say at that point when she came around to him?
Your father
and I have been tearing our hair looking for you. Why do you treat your father and me? Was Joseph misrepresenting his position? Or doesn't parenthood mean blood of my blood and bone of my bone? Does it mean the person that I provide bread and food and shelter for, and the person who's going to inherit from me, and the person to whom I give guidance and direction and love and nurture? That it's a function rather than a biological identity? Ever since people have lived together in civilized groups and have had rules under which they've operated, call them laws if you like, I don't like that. To me, law is a practice, and those things over there are called rules. A rule is to a lawyer like an aspirin tablet is to a doctor. An aspirin tablet is not medicine. I call it that all the time. My brother doesn't like that. He's an MD. He says he practices medicine and he uses things like scalpels and aspirin tablets. I practice law. I use things like rules and other devices. Ever since people have had rules, they've had rules about who is related to whom in families, in family groups. There are literally hundreds of decisions by courts in the United States which repeat over and over that the family is the fundamental block of our civilization. What's a family? Somebody tell me what a family is.
A unit of society.
A unit of society. Does Peter have a family? The young man I was telling you about. Is he Nullius Filius, nobody's baby, outside the law?
Did the mother leave him? You didn't tell us that.
Mother took him someplace.
Well, then he has a family.
The mother.
The mother and the child are a family.
You don't know whether he has a family.
A partial family.
A partial family.
Somebody who wants that baby very much will give him a family.
An adoption.
Yes.
I have a hunch the mother's going to keep that child.
And that is Peter's family.
Yeah, right. The mother and all the grandparents.
But the father doesn't have to support?
No, the mother has to take over. We don't want that.
The father could not come around and say, I want to act as a parent.
He can try.
He can try almost anything. Can he do it?
I think if his heart was in it, that maybe the breach might be mended. But if it couldn't be.
I understand what you're saying, but think what you're asking some judge to decide. Sir, is your heart in it? I don't mean to be flippant. Give me a more practical test.
I believe that he has to promise to support that child. If he
promises to support, he may
see it.
And if he does not promise to support, he can go his way and ignore the child?
Yes. The girl could take him to court, and she could get support from him.
She can get support for herself or for the child?
For both.
For both.
Well, not for herself.
If she takes him to court and compels him to pay support, as she certainly can in a bastardy action or affiliation action, is he then the father? Legally? Or is he just a screaming, unwilling contributor of funds?
Well, he's only the father.
Biologically
the father. If we were going to have a transfusion or maybe a bone graft, I'd be very interested in the question of whether or not he was biologically, you know, compatible. But spare me from the knife. I got all the grief I can handle trying to get a transfusion of bucks or support for the child. Does biology matter? Support, parenting, protection, inheritance, these other things that you people named, and there are hundreds of them that we decide by deciding who is related to whom, set in families. I mean, there are hundreds of practical decisions that we decide.
Well, what is the mother-child paternity suit?
And proves that he is the biological father? Putative. Putative, that is, thought to be. Not the one who was punishing. That's another word. It's a nice idea. But, yeah.
Well, I understood that.
Putative means I accuse you of being. It means the suspected, alleged, something of that sort. Let me tell you about Charlie Chaplin, an old friend of ours. I think most of you will remember Charlie Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin lived with a woman a few years down in California to whom he was not married. She had a child. No question what he had frequently had intercourse with her. He refused to support her or the child and took off for Switzerland. But he had some property around here, and so an action was brought to collect support. And Mr. Chaplin's lawyers produced blood tests, matching of blood cells, at that time a relatively new science, to indicate that his blood could not identify him. Indeed, it could establish affirmatively that he was not the biological father of this child. His non-wife, roommate, hadn't always stayed home, it appears. And so the argument was made that inasmuch as Mr. Chaplin is not the biological father of this child, he cannot be the one who is going to give parenting, direction, love, security, protection, support, and all the rest of the hundreds of things that apply to this being set in families. The people arguing on behalf of the wife and the child said, "We're not going to ask for a transfusion of blood. And we don't want his companionship. What we want is money. He has it, we don't. The child needs to be supported. And during the time that the wife was with him, this pregnancy occurred and it appeared that he was the father. And in a way, he ought to support. Will you hold Mr. Chaplin to support or will you not?" It's important to you to know that it's blood of blood, flesh of flesh.
Well, if you want, you're going to ask. I mean, these are punitive actions, so to speak, and the woman is trying to get some money to. She's not willing to take on the care of that child herself, and it's her responsibility too, as much as it is the father.
Oh yes.
And if she's not really, she didn't think about this before she got in this situation, but afterwards she did. And then she wanted to get some money from Charlie Chaplin.
Because he had been living with her?
Because she had had intercourse with him and was living.
Because he had been providing for her? because they had made a life together until it got too expensive.
If he had the feeling for the woman, he'd want to.
But he didn't want to.
No.
Now comes the question of whether or not he must.
I don't
think not. Court in California said yes. And people screamed all over, what do you mean? You know, that's based upon blood of my blood and flesh of my flesh. Not the need to be supported, not the need to be protected, not the need to be cared for and loved. That doesn't fit the requirements. My daughter is not the only woman who has shared a room in delivery with someone who is not married. In this state, for the entire state of Washington, 15 out of every 100 children are born outside of marriage. That's for the entire state, farms, villages, and cities. In the cities in the United States, especially in the major cities, the large cities of the East and the coast, over half of the children being born in those urban areas are not born to people who are married to each other. Over half. Now, how shall we handle our problems of protection and parenting and nurture and support?
Well, we seem to have chosen to do it through welfare rather than the burdensome task of placing a burden of support on the fathers. We seem to let the fathers off scot-free. They can play around all they want to without paying the price, in other words. Whereas we say, well, the mother, she better bring up the child and support it. She's no more responsible for this child than the father is. But we let the father off scot-free because it's a burden to go out and run him down and place the burden, at least half the burden, where it belongs. So we, society, elected to take the other route, which appears to be less work, and dig into our pocketbook and support these fatherless families. As you say, there are a great many.
In the state of Washington, about $4 million a month, enough to run my law school for several years. Every month. Of course, we have laws, first state laws and now federal laws, that mandate that no child support shall be paid. No child support shall be paid until the mother discloses suspected identity, until the state is informed, and we have departments in every state, the obligation of which department is to go after that money and get it back from the errant father. Otherwise, no federal money for that purpose, and federal money is 85% of all the money we're spending here. In other words, a tremendous crunch. Are you happy with the concept that our primary focus ought to be how to keep from spending money to take care of the child? Yeah, that's an interesting problem and a fascinating one, and I'd like to talk about that some tomorrow morning. Right now, can you focus on the child for a moment? Should our concern be primarily whether or not I, as a taxpayer, have to come up with a very substantial amount of money to buy bread and food and shelter for somebody else's child, or shall we redirect our focus?
I think that in the very, very early stages, because this is a traumatic experience for the woman, that we should give support if it's necessary. If the extended family will not help her, and this happens a lot, that the grandparents refuse to have the person in the house, which is a sin, I think.
Do you think Peter has a grandfather?
I'm sure that, well, I don't know if he does or not, but I would hope he has. I hope he has a grandmother, too, that cares.
I mean, if the father's parents are living, are they the grandparents of Peter?
Well, they are, but
not the mothers now. The father, the biological father, are his parents, grandparents of Peter? What do you mean by grandparent?
Parents, well, commonly accepted that the parents of the father would be grandparents if they're a child by his father.
Set in a family. But are we going to set these rascals? Oh, I shouldn't say that. They may be the finest people in one ever saw. Are we going to identify and relate those blood of blood, bone of bone, line of descent? I've already told you that in the early law, the child born not set in a family was nobody's baby. No one had any rights and no one had any obligations. The child lived or died depending upon somebody's whim. During the time of the plague in Europe, the bubonic plague, suddenly became a real shortage of manpower and womanpower too. Manpower was a little bit more important because how could you fight wars if you didn't have cannon fodder? And so all of a sudden we got the law changed back there. So that the child was the child of the mother, and she had an obligation to provide support and to rear the child. And the child took its identity from the maternal, not the paternal line, because so many other things got messed up if you went through the paternal line. I've been told by friends of mine, for example, that this unwillingness to identify the biological father who was not legally related, that is not in the legal family, very important for things like who owned what land, who would inherit. Indeed, at about the 6th or 7th century, here a church historian could help me more, because of very bad lawyering that was going on in Rome, there were no corporations then. And land had to be owned by a person. And the law was that if the child was a legal child, a legitimate child, that the land that you owned had to pass to your child. Could not be conveyed away to somebody else. And obviously any human being was going to die after a while. There were no corporations to perpetuate titles. So there was such a thing known as the bishop soul in the church. He was the one who owned the land. The title of the church's property had to be someplace. If he had a legitimate child, the church's property had to pass to that child. Therefore, bishops were prohibited from having legal children. They were not prohibited from having children outside of marriage. That's quite a modern idea. We are scandalized by the fact that popes had children. Well, that was just because lawyers hadn't done the job of setting up a corporation to own title. It was necessary to protect the church's property that it go from bishop to bishop, to bishop. Then pretty soon somebody got thinking about the children and they said it's really not right to go around producing all of these children and not being a father to them, and therefore the priest ought to be celibate. Whereas the Orthodox Church, Umau has been informing us about that this week, having a schism and going east, and quite another body of law where they didn't have to worry about the ownership of the church's property, didn't have that problem. They've never been celibate. At least that's the way the lawyer looks at the problem.
bishops have to be.
Bishops must be, or I think
priests,
we had another priest who could own
have to be.
We'd have a priest who could own the title. It's a different set of laws.
Metropolitans are not allowed to be, isn't that Omaha?
Yeah, right. Metropolitans, archbishops, patriarchs, and bishops can't be married. They can be widowed.
Focus then, if you will, on the question of what are we trying to do with our law of legitimacy? What's our objective? What are we trying to accomplish with legitimacy? I reject emphatically the idea that this is to punish this child. I will almost do corporal battle with you if you try to lay a hand on Peter. I only knew him for a few moments. He's a fine infant. And I reject the notion that we're going to punish Peter for having come into this world to a mother who was not married. All right, if that's not our idea, what are we trying to do?
Vern, could I digress a moment with you and place Peter in the family such as we have on every campus who are living together, who are willing to support this child, but are not married? Is there some difference there? Would Peter be in a different category?
We can place Peter in a different category by an adoption, legally, but simply placing the custody, the physical care of Peter with another person won't do it.
Well, I'm talking about if he were produced in, say, this family living in Pullman, Washington, they're living together, students, well, maybe both of them, they have this child, they love him, they want him, they're going to keep him.
Let's test it. Suppose that John Doe, being a member of this community, providing love, care, affection, food, shelter, protection, doing a bang-up job of parenting for Peter, is wrongfully killed. That is, somebody runs into him with an automobile accident. And kills this man, John Doe, who is providing this care for Peter. Can Peter, or a guardian for Peter, sue the person who caused the accident for having deprived Peter of the love, the affection, the care, the nourishment, and the support?
Yeah, California.
I'm sorry?
I think this thing varies with the states, doesn't it? Now, if I'm not mistaken, according to my Jewish neighbors at least, in Jewish rule, you're a Jew if your mother was a Jew. Now, they have some special rules about passing property.
Those are good Jewish laws, rules. We have good Christian rules, and neither one of them are enforced by the Supreme Court of our states or of our nation.
No.
Let me turn my question around.
Let me ask you another question, however. You posed the question of this couple living on campus that had a child, and so on and so forth. Now, if the birth certificate issued by the state, and the mother says the father of this child is so-and-so, and if on the birth certificate it gives the mother's name and the father's name, then what?
Then what? Suppose that one day I walk down to the courthouse and the clerk says to me, "Congratulations, Mr. Reed."
Yeah.
And I say, "Thank you, for what?" "Why, the birth of your son." And I say, "Whoop, wait a minute." And he says, "I've got the birth certificate right here. Delivered yesterday, Swedish Hospital. You are the father, congratulations." And I say, "Oh boy." Am I the father? Neither in fact nor in law. Suppose that Peter is killed. Can the person who has been caring for Peter, giving love and affection and pablum and all the rest of the things, if Peter is wrongfully killed, can that person sue the tortfeasor, the one who has wrongfully killed Peter?
Yeah. What kind of person is this?
The one who has been furnishing, not the biological father, it's the one who has taken over the parenting role. The one who is acting to...
Vern, can a non-wedded couple adopt a child?
Yeah.
Well, is this child legally adopted?
This child is not legally adopted.
Well, can't we as a Christian community sue for it?
Yeah. I can answer that one. No. We have no standing. It's not our child.
What about the mother? Can the mother sue for it?
The mother can sue.
Even foster parents can. They have standing in terms of the relationship with the child.
And again, it will depend upon the law of the state.
That's right.
The United States and the United States Supreme Court in the last 3 or 4 years has had no less than a half dozen cases to try and resolve just exactly these points. Let me give you the facts of one. There was a man and a woman in the state of Illinois. Name was Trimble and Gordon. They had a child. They were not married to each other. After the child was born, the father, in writing, with a notary public signing the document, acknowledged the fact that the child was his. The law of Illinois says, the law of Illinois said at that time, that the unmarried father of a child did not have rights. The father could not inherit from the child. The father could not sue someone who wrongfully caused the child's death. The father had no benefits for Social Security or AFDC payments, aid for families with dependent children, unless the father acknowledged the child in writing, he did that, and married the mother. It became advantageous for the father to try and claim his relationship. There are Shirley Temples in the world, you know, who suddenly come up with $1 million. And then there are just children who get $100 a month AFDC payments, which is kind of nice to have coming every month, too. So the father said, I am the father. I have acknowledged the child. And because it is blood of my blood and bone of my bone, I am entitled to the child. I am entitled to the child. Here I pause to read from Encyclopedia Americana, which fortunately was on hand, something that our forefathers declared. They said that it is self-evident. We hold these truths to be self-evident. You don't have to prove them, they're there. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable. Stop and work that word unalienable through your heads if you've never done it before. Unalienable does not mean they cannot be taken away from you. It means you cannot give them away. You cannot alienate them. You cannot dispossess yourself of them. Created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator, an act of creation. An act of creation. Every human being has certain unalienable rights, that is, things that he cannot give away. If he gives them away, he's no longer a human being. And that among these are life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And that to secure these rights, governments are instituted by men by the will of the people and so forth. Trimble says, that child is mine. By an act of creation. And no one can take that child from me. Nor can I give it away. You can't say that I'm not the father. I am the father. I can prove it by blood tests. Now what?
Is he willing to marry his wife?
No. Acknowledge the child, yes. Hey, I'm beginning to sound like Ed Schramm. Yes. Marry the mother, no. That's daughter involuntary through.
But does the mother want him around?
No. She wants the welfare payments. What now?
Or maybe.
I'm sorry? I didn't hear.
Go to court.
Go to court. And what shall we argue in court?
Throw the bum out.
And that's what Illinois did. Illinois said, look, we don't know whether you're a good candidate for a blood transfusion or a bone graft. Now, we don't deny that you are biologically this child's father. But because you didn't marry the mother, you're not legally set into a family. That child is not your child in the law. And he said, you can't do that to me because you are depriving me of what I am. And he argued the 14th Amendment.
Did it go to the Supreme Court?
Went to the United States Supreme Court.
Well,
after he lost in Illinois. In both places, he argued on the basis of the 14th Amendment to the federal Constitution. It may be that some of you have never read the 14th Amendment. I find that very hard to believe. But it's possible. All persons, not black, not white, not male, not female, not Greek, not Jew, all persons born or naturalized in the United States are subject to the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges and the immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, of liberty, or property.